Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Common bacterial blight is a serious disease of beans. And before I even go further, I want to acknowledge the co-authors, Deidre Forey. She's from South Africa. She's a plant pathologist. She actually ran in the New York City Marathon last Sunday. George Vandermark was a research geneticist working on alfalfa, who now works on lentils and chickpeas at Pullman, Washington. The disease is caused by Xanthomonas xanopotus, went through a name change recently, causes 10 to 75% yield loss. You can see the severity of the disease and what it will do to the plants. Prefers high temperature, high humidity. It can be seed-borne for 30 years, and it's epiphyte on many different plants, so it's hard to get rid of. It's a worldwide problem. We're most interested in breeding for resistance. Breeding for resistance is complex. There have been many QTL identified. They're influenced by environment. The best sources of resistance come from different species, so it requires interspecific hybridization to get the best resistance. And then there's been different genes proposed in different plant tissues. If you look at sources of resistance, these are from the primary gene pool from Phaseolus vulgaris landraces. Scarlet runner bean is Phaseolus coccineus, and then tepary bean is Phaseolus acutifolius. These are lines with the different sources. This one only has one of the landrace QTLs, and you can see it gives a minor effect. Disease score goes from 1, no symptoms, to 9, completely susceptible. If you look at the Phaseolus coccineus source of resistance, gives an intermediate effect on resistance. And then if you have the temporary source of resistance, which this line has, you get a high level of resistance. This line actually has 2 QTLs, why it has 2 X's. And when you do different combinations of these sources, you get sort of an additive effect on resistance. So this line has 2 sources of landrace resistance. This line has 1 from the primary gene pool and another from scarlet runner bean. Again, an intermediate source or intermediate resistance. We're most interested in looking at interactions among these QTL, and we're going to look at these two today in this talk. It has a 4-parent pedigree. The bold accession is the tepary bean. It was reported in 1984. The first inheritance study used generation mean analysis, and they concluded that there was 1 major gene and 2 minors. The next study did a real mapping population using rapid markers, and they identified 2 major QTL on linkage group 6 and 8. And the R-squared values have ranged for these QTL from 10 to 30% of phenotypic variation explained in different crosses. Subsequent studies converted the rapid markers that were tightly linked to the QTL to scar markers. And then there's been other studies that have shown potential for marker-assisted selection with these markers, and also in advanced germplasm, you could use the markers to detect the presence of the QTL. The next speaker, Dr. Duncan, will talk more about this marker-assisted selection. I mentioned that there's been many QTL identified. This is the 11 linkage groups of Phaseolus vulgaris. These are the QTL that have been identified. Every linkage group has at least 1 QTL. The 2 that we're interested in are these in purple, which are on B6 and B8. Our objectives were to interpret the dominant markers. The 2 scar markers are dominant. We needed to convert those to codominant markers to be able to look at allelic dosage effect of the QTL. And then we wanted to look at the interaction between the 2 QTL. So the scar markers were cloned and resequenced. They were analyzed with a software to design TACMAN probes, and the probes were labeled with a fluorescence. So if we use just the scar markers and a standard PCR gel with the scar markers, which are dominant, you get 1 band for those lines or genotypes that are heterozygous, have 1 copy of the QTL. And those that have 2 copies, you can't distinguish the 2 with a dominant marker. So real-time PCR assay, you have twice the template in these of the marker in these individuals than you do in these. So the real-time PCR, the homozygotes will cross a threshold sooner in fewer cycles than the heterozygotes. And then those without the marker just are kind of a flat line. So you can distinguish homozygotes from heterozygotes using real-time PCR. The other thing we wanted to do was to move these QTL into near isogenic background. And initially, Deirdre Forey had started a backcrossing program to move the resistance from ZAN-159 into TBIS, which is a South African cultivar that's very popular but very susceptible to common bacterial blight. You can see it right here. She used just phenotypic selection to move the resistance from ZAN-159 into TBIS using a series of backcrosses, and then each F1 generation she would screen for high-level resistance and backcross to the recurrent parent. At the last backcross, she screened for resistance, and then she did rigorous field and greenhouse screening in subsequent generations to obtain backcross 5 advanced lines with a high level of resistance. She looked at the scar markers in a multiplex PCR reaction, so you'd get two bands, one for the BC420 on top and the other for SU91, and she observed most of her advanced backcross lines had both markers. A few were minus the BC420 marker. So what we had her do is take the highest lines with the highest level of resistance and both markers, cross it back to TBIS again to generate a backcross 6 F2. So we had 116 of these F2s that were segregating for reaction to common bacterial blight and for both of these QTLs. And generally, when we mention these markers, they're synonymous with the QTLs. And I guess her backcrossing using just phenotypic selection and seeing the markers in those advanced lines kind of provided evidence that the markers remain linked to the traits. And that's been true in many different studies. For the 116 backcross F2 plants, then she inoculated with the pathogen using a multiple needle method in the greenhouse. And they were rated again from 1, no symptoms, to 9, completely susceptible. Each plant then, we took DNA from each plant and did the real-time PCR assays for identification or interpretation of the scar markers. So what we observed, and I'll show this slide again in tabular, or these data in tabular form, but all those individuals that lacked the SU91 QTL were susceptible. Those that had the SU91 QTL but lacked the BC420 QTL had intermediate reaction, and those that had one allele at least of each QTL had a high level of resistance. If you look at the difference between homozygotes versus heterozygotes for the SU91, there was no difference, so the marker or the QTL has a dominant effect. Similarly, the BC420, whether in homozygous or heterozygous state, has a dominant effect. So if you think of two independent gene loci, you think of a 4x4 Punnett square, there's 16 possible zygotes, 9 possible genotypes, and then each of the genotypes has a frequency of 1 to 2 to 1 to 2 to 1 to 4 to 2 to 2 to 1. So out of the 116 individuals, we would have an expected segregation of 7, 14, 7, and so forth. And this is what we observed. So everything, our chi-square was a bust, actually, because these individuals, there was way too many of these, so the chi-square was non-significant because we had segregation distortion of too many of these individuals that were recessive for BC420. Still, to develop a model, we could say that those individuals that lacked the SU91 were susceptible. Those that had SU91 but not the BC420 QTL were intermediate. And again, those that had one copy of each were highly resistant. And that is a 9 to 3 to 4 ratio, which indicates duplicate recessive epistasis. So we wanted to confirm that our model in the F2 and the F3 generation. So we took 3 backcross 6 F2 plants for each of the 3 or 9 genotypes. We screened 25 F3 progeny from each F2 plant. So we had about 75 progeny for each genotype that we looked at in the F3. We didn't do markers in F3 generation, we just looked at phenotypic segregation. So when we looked at the homozygous dominant class for both QTL, you'd expect no segregation, and we basically observed no segregation. All the plants were resistant. Here our score or scale goes from 1 to 1.5, so these are also resistant, and there was just a couple. When we looked at all the other homozygous classes susceptible for both QTL, they were true breeding susceptible. I won't show you those data. And then the others that were recessive for the BC420 and dominant for SU91 and vice versa were also true breeding. When we looked at the progeny from F2 plants that were fixed for the BC420 QTL but segregating or heterozygous for the SU91, you'd expect a 3-to-1 segregation, and that's what we observed. 75% of the plants were resistant and 25% were susceptible. When we looked at the F3 progeny from F2 plants that were heterozygous for BC420 or fixed for SU91, you'd again expect a 3-to-1 ratio of 3 resistant to 1 susceptible. Here we have, if we go below 2 as resistant and take these as the intermediate resistance, you'd observe a 3-to-1 ratio. So I have 2 minutes left, right, or so. When we took the heterozygotes for both QTL and looked at the F3 progeny, you'd expect a 9-to-3-to-4 ratio, and that's what we observed. 9 resistant, 3 intermediate, and 4 susceptible. So we took 2 QTL and we fit them to a qualitative digenic inheritance model, and I think having a neuroisogenic background helped us do that. And also it was imperative that we had codominant markers to identify all those different genotypic classes. Again, the BC420 QTL does not condition resistance in the absence of SU91, which is termed a duplicate recessive epistatic model. We observed it in the F2 and confirmed it in the F3. These results may explain why some breeders have had trouble trying to select for resistance just using the BC420 marker in certain backgrounds. And then the fixed classes we're using to look at linkage drag effects in the field to see if these QTL cause linkage drag, which has been reported in the literature. Thank you very much. It's vulgaris. Yeah, well, I think they'd be useful genetic stocks, but they have photoperiod sensitivity in the U.S., so they're hard to work with. Thank you.